Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, sponsored by 1-800-DIAL-DJs.com and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new media and home shopping network capital of the world, and we're so proud, St. Petersburg, Florida. I have steadfastly avoided inviting soap stars to be my guests on Mr. Media Radio for a very simple reason. I don't watch soaps. Oh, I did for a year or two in the late 80s when my new wife was hooked on All My Children and she recorded the show daily for playback after work. But I was newlywed then and I had a very good excuse. So what is Kevin G. Schmidt, who plays Noah Newman on The Young and the Restless, doing here today? If you have to ask, you obviously haven't looked at the young man's resume. Two Cheaper by the Dozen movies, playing the son of Steve Martin and brother of Tom Welling and Hilary Duff, co-starring with Selena Gomez and Demi Lovato in Princess Protection Program, and episodes of everything from Numbers to Without a Trace. Okay, that's a short span, but there's a lot of stuff he's worked on. You know, I guess there's not a lot of difference from Numbers to Without a Trace, but he's done a lot of stuff. He's also got a part in Alvin and the Chipmunks, The Squeakquel, due out in December 2009. And I'm a lifetime Alvin fan, so that was pretty cool to me. He also stars as Justin in an online TV series, Poor Paul, which you can catch at YouTube or at www.poorpaul.com. Kevin, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you for having me.
How you doing?
I'm not too shabby. I'm actually I'm moving right now, so this entire weekend has been filled with packing things into a U-Haul and then unpacking it and then repacking it and then unpacking it. But 95% of it's done, so I'm feeling pretty good today.
Well, so maybe you can explain to me, because I was looking at your MySpace page yesterday, MySpace page, and it says Hugo's with, maybe this stands for something, GMA Boots, Uncle Wayne, and My Pops, fuel for the final day of moving. What the hell are you talking about?
G-Ma, Grandma, Grandma Boots, and Uncle Wayne, and My Pops.
Grandma Boots.
Exactly. I'm from Kansas originally, so my grandma's got a nickname that we've called her since we were little kids.
G-Ma. I feel so old all of a sudden.
Oh, really? You got to stick with the slang, my man.
I guess so. I bring this up early in the conversation because I know that you are a man of the web. You are you're on Twitter, you're on MySpace, you're on Facebook. I'm kind of curious, how does that feed into your career, and or does it? Or you just do it for your friends, or you know, do your fans find you this way?
That's a good question, and I'm not exactly sure on a on a studio or network standpoint how much it really affects in a good way or even a bad way. So I know I've got yelled at from the soap for posting updates on my Twitter about storylines, but I've been doing this for a long time, and I've never had like the Disney Channels behind me, you know, signing me to a big contract, or I've never really had a network show that's lasted more than a couple years. So it's been my way to kind of keep myself out there and be my own businessman and keep myself, you know, accessible to the fans that are actually going to go watch the television shows or buy the CDs or buy the DVDs or watch my web series. So it's really kind of an appreciation thing, giving back to the people that allow me to do what I do.
Do you, do you find that people follow you rather independently, or do they want to interact? And if for those that do interact, you know, how do they interact with you?
A mix of both of those. There's people that just like to know what I'm doing, and then there's, you know, I have some fans that will send me a MySpace message every day if I answer them, but it's just there's so many tweets to respond to, or MySpace or Facebook, or it's, you know, when you're networking for yourself, it gets a little exhausting, but you have to realize that these are the people that allow you to do it. So I put as much time as I possibly can into interacting with my fans because I really do appreciate what they give me.
Well, let's start with one. Kevin is on MySpace at KGS on MySpace. That's pretty easy, right? KGS on MySpace. Where would they find you on Twitter and on Facebook?
Twitter is Kevin G. Schmidt, and Facebook is Kevin G. Schmidt.
Okay, so pretty easy for anybody who knows your work. So speaking of work, what's current for you right now? You've got the Poor Paul going on. This is my problem with the soap thing. I honestly don't know if you're actively on right now or not.
Yeah, I'm. I'm
isn't that terrible?
I'm in between a bunch of things right now. I directed the finale of Poor Paul about 3 weeks ago, and that's going to air probably a week before Thanksgiving. So, yes, I'm working on that behind the lens. I just had the ADR for Alvin and the Chipmunks with Cummins out on Christmas, as you might know. I'm on the soap actively, yes. I'm probably going to be on it pretty steadily until the end of the year. I have a pilot for Cartoon Network, a live-action show that I'm waiting to hear if we're picked up and greenlit or not. So right now I'm staying busy on as much as I possibly can and creating projects as well. I have a couple movies that I've written that are being pitched around and TV show concepts. And I'm just I'm putting all the lines in the water and see what I catch.
I'll be honest with you. I have a lot of admiration for that. That, you know, you're 21, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I really do genuinely have a lot of admiration for the fact that you are doing your own projects. You're working in traditional media, the soap, obviously. Do you feel a pull and a tug in a particular direction, or do you want to continue to be that broad?
No. The goal is to kind of be able to facilitate each one of my passions. And I started off in this business as an actor. I moved out to LA when I was about 8 years old, and I've been working, you know, pretty consistently since then. But as an actor, I realized that, you know what, I'm not really as involved in the creative process as I would like. And the words written for me, the tone's created, the director's telling me what to do. So I was like, no, I need to diversify myself. I need to have other outlets for me to express myself other than my acting. So luckily I had Bonnie Hunt, who was my mother on the Cheaper by the Dozen films, was a big mentor of mine and kind of pushing that entrepreneurial spirit in this business of saying, hey, if you want to be your own boss, you have to create. And if you want to create, you have to write. So when I was 15, I really started to write, and it was a hobby at first, and then it obviously became a passion, and it's something that I do almost every day to this point. It just allows me to keep that muscle active and working, and the same with the acting is I have the soap that I can jump in 2 or 3 days, 4 days a week and really polish my acting because it's the fastest medium of storytelling you could possibly be a part of. We shoot an episode a day. You know, I go to work and I have 20 pages, 30 pages, so there's another side of my business that I polish there, and then the movies allow me to be extremely creative and take my time and think about every moment and every shot. So I don't want to have to focus in on one thing. I want to be able to, you know, write and produce and act and direct, hopefully my entire life. That's what I'm going for.
That's great. I mean, you're certainly born at the right time for that kind of ambition where, you know, I know Poor Paul is more involved in this, but you can grab a camera. You can go out on your own and shoot something, post it the next day, and, you know, you're in the business. It's good. I was curious. I had talked a couple weeks ago to someone I think you know, Jonathan Bennett.
Yeah.
Who was in the second Cheaper by the Dozen movie with you, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And has gone on to be Van Wilder in the second one of those movies. And it was interesting because he talked to me a lot about being on that set and how he was at the as much as he could at the elbow of Steve Martin. Who played the dad, obviously, and that he was trying to just absorb everything he could. And I was going to ask you about Martin, so I found it very interesting that you brought up Bonnie Hunt, who, of course, played the mom. It's interesting. How did it happen that you had the opportunity to develop the relationship in that way and get that good advice.
Steve, first of all, is the consummate professional. He's obviously been around for a very long time, and he's great at what he does. In order to kind of crack his shell and get inside his brain, it's really just about, you know, quiet conversations when he's doing a crossword puzzle in his chair between shots. So you don't really get an opportunity to kind of get in his head and kind of pick his brain about the various things that he's been able to accomplish, because he is that writer, producer, director, actor, musician. You know, he's really a jack of all trades. But with Bonnie, she has such an incredible heart and incredible eye, and she was able to kind of see me as a kid on those sets, kind of quietly disagreeing with some of the choices that we were given. You know, we're a family of 12, and we're mad at our dad, but we're all sitting next to him like it's a powwow. You know, if we're mad at our dad, we're going to stand as far away as possible. We're not going to look at him. So this small little instinct that, you know, I would voice to my little sister in the movie, Allison Stoner, who we got together and worked on. My first thing I directed was a dance instructional video with Allison Stoner. And Bonnie really saw that I cared about what I was doing, and I was a storyteller. So, you know, from there we've kept in contact, and then thankfully we got out there and we did a second film, so we were in direct contact once again, and we were able to just kind of bounce ideas off each other. And then since then we've just kind of been friends, and she's a mentor, and if I really need her advice, and I can send her an email, but you know, she's the busiest woman in talk shows right now. So we just try to connect as much as possible, because she sees that I am that next generation of creator, and she is that established generation. And when you work together, beautiful things can happen. So that's how that relationship went from kind of complete strangers to where it is now.
That's great too. I mean, she could see past. As I recall, you were the son with the tuba.
A clarinet, but I'm mainly
clarinet
in those films. Yes.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, for her to see past that and you know, kind of take you a little under wing, I think it's great. How? Let's talk about some roles now. How has your career changed in terms of the acting, from what you played in those movies to, you know, doing the Princess Protection Program these days, or even Young and the Restless? Did you ever think that you would be, you know, stuck in a certain type of role?
You know what? It's been interesting, because I actually started off in this business stuck in a role. I was a short, chubby kid, and every audition, or every, let's say, 8 out of 10 auditions I would go on were for the bully, or for the fat kid, or for the best friend. So I actually started off as kind of a character actor, and I had my niche, and I worked a lot, and I did very well. But for those other 2 out of 10 auditions I had, they were for a role that they were going to give to some, you know, blonde-haired, green-eyed, fit kid. But I came in, and I took what was on paper, and I made it come to life more than any of the other kids in the room. So I've always cared about the craft of acting, and I have a lot of friends that I grew up with, you know, when I was 10 years old, that don't act anymore, because they didn't learn what that craft entailed. They didn't kind of see the psychology behind it and the lifestyle you have to lead to excel in it and to grow. So over the years, yeah, I came from being a character actor and really playing kind of specific roles, and then as I developed into a young man, I've kind of been able to keep that chameleon shell and be, you know, the bad guy, the good guy, the heartthrob, the guy who has a secret, the killer. So I've really been able to keep that character role, but inside this new shell that's kind of more marketable, quote unquote. So it's really been kind of an interesting evolution, because I've had 2 different perspectives on the exact same business, and I've been the same kid on the inside, but my shell has changed on the outside. And in turn, the way people have treated me and the roles that come my way, and just the attention has been different. But it's good to have both perspectives, because I appreciate everything I have that much more.
How did you vanquish the chubby kid? Did he just, was it just a question as you got older he disappeared, or did you make a conscious effort to change physically?
It was
for that kid?
It was work. I mean, it was after the second Cheaper by the Dozen, and I saw that, you know, I would read scripts, and I would be the best friend, and I would have, you know, a quarter as many scenes as the lead would have, but I would read all the lead scenes, and I could see myself playing that character. I could see me having those moments and those beats, but I wasn't going to get there because I didn't look the way that they wanted to see it. So really, after Cheaper by the Dozen 2, I was like, you know what? I got to change something about my life. I don't know what it is. I want to be healthier. So really, I changed from kind of a conventional processed bagel bites and Kraft cheese to an organic lifestyle. You know, I try to eat as much all natural food, no hormones, no pesticides as possible. I learned to exercise regularly. I run a couple days a week. I lift weights, mainly just body resistance stuff. But yeah, it was a conscious effort to be like, you know what, I need a change. I know it's going to take a lot of work, but it's going to build my character and it's going to keep me disciplined. So it's a necessary step. And, you know, 2 years later, I kind of evolved into who I am now.
Well, let me ask you about this. I mean, okay, so you're 21, and you mentioned you're very kind about Bonnie Hunt, but, you know, she's someone that you run into on the set and you have some contact with. But I'm wondering, I mean, were there parents, were there other mentors who helped you kind of recognize both that, you know, physically it would be helpful to you to change, but also, you know, I mean, you're an ambitious young guy. You see the big picture. Were there people along the way who kind of helped you with that?
I mean, I have an incredibly supportive family, and obviously they're my fail-safe if I need to call upon them. But, you know, I've always kind of known that I can attain anything I want in life if I put my mind to it and I put the work in. So, you know, for me, what kept me going and kept me motivated was, you know, after 3 months, I dropped 12 pounds, and I was like, hey, you know, I feel better. Like, my knees don't hurt anymore, and I'm not as winded when I go up the stairs, and I can jump a little higher and run a little faster. So those small little kind of victories and achievements along the way is really what kept me motivated. And then now to this day, it's just all maintenance, and it's just keeping myself in this kind of body-conscious mindset. And it's much easier now. Losing the weight and building muscle from nothing is a lot of work. But once you get to that point, and really diet has so much to do with it, it's much easier to manage. So, yeah, I've had a supportive family for my entire life, and Bonnie was a big mentor in pushing kind of my creative side. So everything just came together at the right time, and now you're seeing kind of the tip of the iceberg, and I've already been around for a while, and now people are just seeing, wait, I remember this kid, oh my gosh, and they're putting the pieces together. So it's kind of cool. It's pretty cool. It's pretty interesting.
Let's talk a little bit about the soap, The Young and the Restless. Is it demanding work for you? Is it fun? I mean, it's every, I don't know, you probably don't shoot every day.
No, I'm a reoccurring character on the show, so I don't have, you know, most of my parents on the show, for instance, have been on there for 19 years. My grandpa's been on there for 31 years, my grandpa show, not my real grandpa, he's a plumber.
Right. I'm actually able to separate the two. Go ahead.
Good. A lot of people get confused. They're like, wait, so you grew up in the business? I'm like, no, I'm from Kansas. You gotta listen. I'll talk a little slower here. But, the soap kind of, it allows me to jump in two times, three times a week. And what's incredible about that show is it forces you to trust your instincts. We get one take per scene, and we have to move on. And, you know, we could have a four-page scene, and I could have, you know, monologues the entire time, and it's up to the actors to get their crap together and make sure that that dialogue is delivered the best they possibly can. So for the soap, it's very much like boot camp. It's you show up, you get all these pages, memorize them as much as you can, trust yourself, deliver the best work, and everybody moves on. And it's a 9-to-5 job. Everyone goes home, and they're working. You know, they're the hardest-working crew in the business. They have very few weeks off. We have a very dedicated fan base that is so kind of attached to the character, so they want to see that show 5 days a week, 365 days a year if they could. But that's the best thing about the soap is it allows me to get in there, and my short-term memory is above and beyond what it was before I got on the show. So that's what's the best thing about that, absolutely.
Now, the show made a little news. I don't follow these things, but I did see this in Entertainment Weekly. I guess Eric Braden who's stepping aside or had a contract dispute. How is that affecting things on the set?
You know what? I'm not exactly sure. That's been a very recent kind of story that's coming out of our production. I don't really wish to comment on any of that stuff, but at the same time, you know, the soap model was created, or our show was created 37 years ago. And 37 years ago, our business was very different. And now it's so interactive, and people just want to find, you know, 5, 6, 7 characters that they can relate with on every basis. So, you know, William Bell created such an incredible format 37 years ago, but I think kind of this evolution of having, you know, we have 80% of our cast are kind of, you know, 30 or 40 and over, so they all share the same fan base. Very few of our cast is, I mean, I'm one of the youngest guys on the show, so there's a lot of restless on our show, but not a lot of young. So I think what's happening now is just that it's a transition, and I don't know if Eric's going anywhere, but I think this is just, you know, the show evolving and happening to make some tough decisions in a tough economy, and everyone's affected by it. You know, we got off the Chipmunks Squeakquel set, which actually was a smaller budget than the first film. So they made a second film for less money, but it's hopefully going to have a bigger return. So everything's evolving in our business, and the soap's going to have to evolve, the movies will evolve, the studios. And that's what really the new media is all about. That's why we created Poor Paul, is because, you know, we have 8 people involved in the entire production of that show, with the actors and editor, director, producer, and writers. And from there, it's just us, and we do it for little or no money, and it's all driven upon passion. And that's kind of the transition that everybody's in. But I don't know what's going on with Eric, to be honest.
What do you want people to know about Poor Paul, about the story, about the nature of it? Obviously, they can find it at poorpaul.com or on YouTube, but, you know, tell people what they should know about it. Try to get them in, lure them in.
We are so proud of this show, mainly because we tackled a new medium of entertainment and distribution before SAG had contracts for it. So we're 2 years into making what we consider a great web show. And mainly because a lot of the crap that's on the web, and I mean web shows-wise, is just people putting up a camera and doing goofy setup acts, and that's it. And they're standalone episodes. There's no stories. There's no characters. It's just randomness. Our show has 3 vibrant, well-rounded characters that everybody can laugh at and everyone can relate to, and you can even feel sorry for them at times. And we take pride in telling 10-minute stories within our 18, 19-season arcs. So we're very much kind of the new storytellers of this new medium. And the thing about the web is there's so much content out there, it's hard to be found unless you have an incredible advertising budget or you have a little niche. I mean, I'm sure you know. You've obviously done good work on this Blog Talk Radio, and it takes kind of bringing in all these different components to make your show bigger than it can be. So, for Poor Paul, we have a lot of fun, we have a lot of laughs, we have a lot of great guest stars, and we tell stories. So, if you want to catch a 10-minute story every Tuesday, and it'll be there for every Tuesday for 6 months out of the year, then that's what we're there for. And you know, we have fun, we push the envelope, we don't care about looking silly. So, it's really an awesome project that we're excited about people, you know, finding, and it's things like this that gets it out there.
Well, I think it's a good thing that a guy who's appearing in Alvin and the Chipmunks, the Squeakquel, does not care about being seen as silly. I think that's a good start.
Oh, no, you can't. You have to have no shame as an actor in this business. It's kind of one of the main traits, and you can't take anything personally, because when someone's yelling at you for doing something wrong, it's not really that you're doing it wrong. You're not just doing it the way they see it. So
right.
That's when I talk about the philosophy and the personality that it takes to be an actor. It's the whole thing.
Well, before we wrap up, I want to come back to Alvin and the Chipmunks. I am, like I said in the opening, I am a huge Alvin fan. I love the first movie. I don't care what anybody says. I love it. I was delighted to hear that there was going to be a sequel. What is your role in the sequel, and you know, what can you tell us about the storyline?
Probably not much. I don't remember what my contract but basically, the Chipmunks are taking a break from the road and touring the world. Obviously, they're these international superstars talking and singing Chipmunks. That's a pretty big deal. And they enroll into normal high school, and they have to kind of live a normal life and blend in. And they all go to a high school where I'm the quarterback of the football team, and I'm kind of the antagonist for a while. I tase them as much as possible, and then I find common ground with Alvin because he's got a little moxie going for him, and he's a pretty good athlete. So I get him on my football team, and we have a pretty big game at the end of the year, which he has a big part in making us come out triumphant. So it's really cool. When we shot the movie, really it was a bunch of actors looking like schizophrenics talking to nothing.
So I was just going to ask you about that. Yeah.
So going into the ADR booth now and seeing these chipmunks plugged in, it becomes iconic then. It was so much, you know, and there's scenes where I'm poking the air when we're shooting, but when they put the chipmunks in there, it's Theodore's button. I'm messing with them. So it's so much fun to kind of see that whole movie come together because really it's all done in post.
Well, if one day you have kids, you will see it in a whole different light as they go, "That's you?" You know,
yeah.
And you'll see it through different eyes. I think it's great. I'm delighted for you to do that.
It's a funny movie. I've seen a lot of good scenes from it. It's done really well.
Excellent. Well, folks, listen, you can catch Kevin G. Schmidt in new episodes of The Young and Restless, weekdays on CBS, and you can catch up on the episodes you missed at CBS.com, which I just discovered this afternoon. I had no idea that the soaps were posted up there, so if you're into that, there's where you can go. And you can also order movies Kevin's been in, including Cheaper by the Dozen and Princess Protection Program, at mrmedia.com, and catch episodes of Poor Paul online, his online TV show, poorpaul.com, also available on YouTube. Finally, let me give you all this. Kevin is on MySpace. It's myspace.com/KGS on MySpace, or Facebook. It's Kevin G. Schmidt. Also Twitter, Kevin G. Schmidt. He is on YouTube, and you know, if there's another thing that'll start up, you'll probably find him there too. Kevin, delightful to talk to a young guy who's got some ambition and kind of sees the world as you do, and I wish you continued good luck.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks so much for being on the show. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. And for more interviews with your favorite TV stars, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. It's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with the stars of Lie to Me, Chuck, Castle, The Secret Life of the American Teenager, and many more. Please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites. Whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, TrueSlant, Pointer Online, Digital Journal, Vox, Mediafly, Podfeed.net, BlogCritics.org, Blueberry, Zencast, Zimbio, Current, or Odeo. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. Or subscribe to Mr. Media's blog on the Amazon Kindle Reader. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman. Thank you so much for joining us today. I always appreciate when you give up a piece of your day and come spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.